Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Today we pick a fight with that stalking horse for neoliberalism, neocolonialism, and capitalist hegemony, the Coca-Cola Company. Is it time to stop drinking Coke? Oh, let me note that a vintage commercial advertisement appears in this installment only for the purposes of propaganda analysis and criticism. No endorsement is made of any commercial product. Onward, then. One of the problems with old age, that is, with being over 40, one of the problems is that you're always annoying the youngsters by remembering events that apparently are now known only to you, three or four other graybeards, Xenophon, Herodotus, and maybe John Quincy Adams, whoever he was. Earlier today, as I was brooding over the evil genius of Coca-Cola advertising and other volumes of forgotten lore, an ancient phrase from the depths of Spiritus Mundi briefly formed in my mind, and that ancient archaic phrase from the collective unconsciousness was blue chip stock. Remember? What was a blue chip stock? There were American corporations back when, not just transnationals with a U.S. subsidiary. A blue chip stock was a share in an American corporation that produced a well-known, high-quality product or service that was managed conservatively and well, that paid dependable, if modest, dividends for every quarter. A company that would still be there and doing the same thing when the shares you left to your children were later inherited by their children. Recall the names of blue chip companies, and you'll be reminded of the 20th century period of economic and political greatness. A time when, at least among white men in the North, everybody had a job. Everybody was earning more than they did 5 years before. Everybody had a place to live and enough to eat. Unemployment was low. Cigarettes were cheap. Gasoline was cheaper. You could still tell a Pontiac from a Buick. College students had scholarships instead of loans. Workers were protected by unions. A family could live on one person's wages. And everybody's family had health care. And the upper class invested their money in municipal bonds and blue chip stocks. And the fabulous names of the blue chip companies, not USX Inc., back then it was the United States Steel Corporation, thank you very much. The Standard Oil Company of New Jersey. The Standard Oil Company of Indiana. The Chase Manhattan Bank. The Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company. Yep, that was the AMP. American Telephone and Telegraph. General Motors Corporation, the Eastman Kodak Company, International Business Machines, Procter & Gamble, and, last but not least, the Coca-Cola Company. Well, to make a long story short, and not a moment too soon, these glory days were back in the American century. That is to say, back before the American financial establishment had completed its pogrom of kidnapping, raping, and robbing American manufacturing and American business, after which manufacturing and business completed the process by staging a slow and painful suicide. Where are the blue chips now? Some, like Westinghouse, are now a footnote in the back of someone else's annual report. Some, like the Pennsylvania Railroad, appear to have vanished without a trace. Some, like IBM, appear still to be doing a little business, even have someone answering the phone during business hours. Now, if your short-term memory is better than mine, you may be thinking, wait, if the whole concept of blue chip were anything other than a joke in today's fast-buck business world, two of the companies mentioned would still qualify. Yes, you are correct. They are the last two mentioned, Procter & Gamble, Inc., and the Coca-Cola Company. Both are manufacturers, both consistently profitable. Both have their headquarters in the provinces, far from Wall Street, that Cincinnati and Atlanta, respectively. Both are managed conservatively. Both manufacture quality products, and both manufacture the same type of product they were making 75 years ago. As for Procter & Gamble, let's say that any company that specializes in cleaning products and has a world headquarters building that is not whiter than white, but in fact gray, 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 can be dealt with some other time. That leaves Coca-Cola. This company did not get to be one of the largest in the world by selling an inferior product. No, it owes its success to the old-fashioned virtues of massive consumer advertising, hardcore business tactics, depleting the groundwater, murdering employees attempting to organize labor unions, and poisoning its customers. David Rovix and I will take a look at murdering workers, and James Corbett will discuss murdering customers, right after this important message.
Like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves. I like to teach the world to sing.
Sing with me.
Evil, I say, and that's nothing. You should see it with the video images accompanying the sound. The visuals are very, very beautiful. If you don't mind watching 150 smiling Moonies in their national costumes standing on a hillside and singing together. As I said, evil. Some theologians have speculated that when Satan comes back to Earth, he'll probably be in disguise, and he probably won't look evil, like Dick Cheney. In fact, he'll probably look beautiful, like the young Sean Connery, or George Clooney, or... I'm trying to remember which fantasies of my lovers are current. And the word lovers is singular possessive. Fantasies of my lovers, like folk singer Jeremy Wallace. Ouch. Jeremy Wallace. Now that one hurts. Anyway, you can see the video and the audio together. It's on YouTube, and you'll find a link at the show's webpage, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. And with that, let me turn to an article from The Guardian. This is an old one from July 2001. What happens when you sue a major corporation? They drag it on forever. So as far as I know, everything here is still current. The title is Coca-Cola Sued Over Bottling Plant Terror Campaign by Julian Borher from The Guardian, 21 July 2001. Coca-Cola's bottling plants in Colombia used right-wing death squads to terrorize workers and prevent the organization of unions, it was alleged in a Miami court yesterday. The U.S. union United Steelworkers is suing Coca-Cola on behalf of the Colombian union, Sinaltrainal, for what the lawsuit describes as, quote, the systematic intimidation, kidnapping, detention, and murder, unquote, of workers in the Colombian plants. Sinaltrainal claims that five of its members working in Coca-Cola bottling plants have been killed in the years 1994 to 2001. Coca-Cola denied any responsibility for the alleged atrocities yesterday, saying the company did not own the bottling plants, which operated under contract. But union lawyers argued that the world's best-known soft drinks company closely controlled the operations of its contractors and was well aware of the brutal intimidation of workers in the bottling factories. The case has focused attention on frequent complaints by critics of globalization that the process of contracting out work to developing countries allows corporations to shrink their responsibilities for safeguarding the basic rights of their workers. The lawsuit details a litany of assassinations and terror which, it claims, were carried out by right-wing paramilitary groups on behalf of the management of Colombian bottling plants. It points to the murder of a union member working at a Coca-Cola bottling plant in Monertia, Cordoba province, on June 21 this year. Oscar Polo was shot to death as he was walking in the street with his youngest daughter. At the time, he had been involved in negotiations with management over proposals to provide security to trade unionists under threat. The lawsuit also gives details of alleged paramilitary operations at the Bebidas y Alimentos bottling plant in the town of Carepa, which operates under contract for Coca-Cola. Two Sinaltreno members, Jose David and Luis Granado, were murdered in 1994. The union lawsuit alleges that the killings were carried out by paramilitary forces, which then presented the rest of the workforce with an ultimatum, either to resign from the union or to flee Carepa. Quote, "The management of Bebidas y Alimentos permitted these paramilitary forces to appear within the plant to deliver this message to union members and leaders," the lawsuit alleges. Unquote. Sinaltreno tried to rebuild its presence in the Carepa plant in 1995, but within a year, the death squads had killed a new union board member, Isidro Gil. Coca-Cola distanced itself from its bottling plants yesterday. Quote, "The Coca-Cola Company does not own or operate any bottling plants in Colombia," a corporate spokesman, Rafael Fernandez, said. "We deny any wrongdoing regarding human rights or any other unlawful activities in Colombia or anywhere else in the world." Daniel Kovalik, a U.S. steelworkers lawyer, said that Coca-Cola had stepped in to curb human rights abuses in Guatemala after three union leaders had been killed in the 1980s. The intervention showed that the company could stop the killings in Colombia if it chose to, he argued. Here's David Rovix with a song on the very topic.
Coke came to Colombia, seeking lower wages. They got just what they came for, but as we turn the pages, we find the workers do not like the sound of their children's hungry cries. So they said, "We'll join the union." They began to organize. So Coke called up a terrorist group called the AUC. Said, "We've got some problems at the factory." The AUC went to the plant, killed two union men, told the rest, "You leave the union or we'll be back again." Well, Coke did not complain about this dirty deed. Why give workers higher wages when Coke is all they really need? They phoned the AUC, said, "Thanks, without you we'd go broke. And to show our appreciation, here's 100 cases of Coke." The baby drinks it in his bottle when the water ain't no good. The dog drinks it, but he don't know if he should. Some folks say it's the nectar of the gods, but Coke is the drink of the death squads. Coke is the drink of the death squads. Well, these workers wouldn't take this situation lying down. Some went up to Georgia, said, "Look what's happened to our town. You American workers get downsized. As for us, we just get shot. And those of us who live, our teeth begin to rot. 'Cause the baby drinks it in his bottle and the water ain't no good. The dog drinks it, but he don't know if he should. Some folks say it's the nectar of the gods, but Coke is the drink of the death squads. Coke is the drink of the death squads." Well, now that's the situation, what are you gonna do? 'Cause the death squads run Colombia and they're paid by me and you. We can let Coke rule the world, see what future that will bring. Or we can drink juice and smash the state, now that's the real thing. 'Cause the baby drinks it in his bottle when the water ain't no good. The dog drinks it, but he don't know if he should. Some folks say it's the nectar of the gods, but Coke is the drink of the death squads. Coke is the drink of the death squads.
David Rovix, ably assisted by Hartford's own Allie Rosenblatt. Well, so much for bloody murder. We'll move on to slow murder by cancer and by methanol poisoning, ably assisted by the world's favorite life sciences corporation, Monsanto, and we'll get to Donald Rumsfeld in a minute. But first, a disclaimer. Since this is a non-commercial station, I won't mention brand names, but I love a certain Diet Cola product produced by the heartless multinational company we're discussing. I used to drink it every morning with breakfast with a squirt of fresh lime juice before I fired up the coffee pot. I would consume 4 or 5 liters per week of this stuff. In the process of producing this installment, I have sworn off. The problem was never part of the original Coca-Cola Company secret formula. In fact, I suspect the original recipe, which included cocaine, produce the pause that refreshes like nothing else. No, the problem started many decades later. Cocaine had been dropped from the recipe. In the diet version, sodium saccharin had been replaced with aspartame, also known by the trade names NutraSweet and Equal. I love the Nutra in NutraSweet, and indeed it was nutritious, if you consider methyl alcohol and formaldehyde nutrients. A little historical background here. You're familiar with Monsanto, which now is in a neck-and-neck competition with the World Bank and World Trade Organization for the coveted title Destroyer of the Third World, and for that matter, the first two as well. The company that brought the world the much-longed-for Terminator seeds, which are good for only 1 year's growth and can't be saved and replanted. The farmer has to take out a loan and buy more Monsanto seeds for next year's crops. This is the company that marketed Roundup Ready seeds, which were the only forms of life that would grow on land sprayed with the world's most poisonous herbicide, Monsanto's Roundup. In India's newly impoverished agricultural regions, especially Andhra Pradesh, thousands of bankrupt family farmers have been committing suicide each year, usually by drinking Roundup. Or perhaps you're a big fan of bovine growth hormone in your family's milk. That's Monsanto again. I'm sure your 7-year-old daughter appreciates having to wear a bra, shave her underarms, and all the other symptoms of precocious puberty that BGH causes. And I'm sure you appreciate Monsanto's efforts to get laws passed forbidding any dairy from advertising that they don't use bovine growth hormone on their cows. Once upon a time, I had a job analyzing major pharmaceutical companies. Back then, before Pfizer bought up everybody else, Monsanto had a pharmaceutical subsidiary called G.D. Searle and Company. I always assumed the GD stood for, well, what GD usually stands for. Anyway, Searle was such a turkey that every year in its annual report, Monsanto's CEO would apologize for the crappy performance of the pharmaceutical division. And every year he'd promise that heads would roll if these turkeys didn't get lower parts of their anatomy into gear PDQ. He'd promise this year after year, understand. It was hilarious. Anyway, years after NutraSweet, Monsanto did eventually introduce a bestseller, the anti-inflammatory Celebrex, later Celebra, later taken off the market, like Merck's Vioxx, for killing too many people. But years before Celebrex, there was the artificial sweetener aspartame, aka NutraSweet. This was a potential blockbuster. Only problem was, it was poisonous. This chemical ended up used in a Diet Cola product of the Coca-Cola Company, and a zillion other products, including baked goods, for which it was especially unsuitable, as it begins breaking down at temperatures above 86 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, so Cyril had a lot riding on this product in development, and not even the FDA was going to approve a sugar substitute that acted like a combination of rat poison and thalidomide. At this time, G.D. Cyril was mostly family-owned, but the family wanted to sell the damn thing. Monsanto was interested in buying it, if and only if Cyril's only promising product, NutraSweet, was approved for some purpose other than euthanizing cats. So Cyril took the only responsible course of action. They brought in a new guy to be CEO. He was a sociopath and well-known inside the Beltway. He knew nothing about science, nothing about nutrition, nothing about medicine, and nothing about the pharmaceutical industry. His name was Donald Rumsfeld, and the rest is history. Soon after approval, Monsanto bought G.D. Cyril, kept it for a long while, and made a bundle selling NutraSweet. Years later, another drug company, Pharmacia Inc., bought Monsanto, kept the Cyril division, and spat out the rest. That gave Pharmacia Celebrex. Some years later, because of Celebrex, a.k.a. Celebra, Pfizer bought Pharmacia. So the next time you wash down two or three Viagras with a Diet Coke, you know whom to thank on both counts. And let's let James Corbett take the story from here.
Aspartame is a toxic chemical of the first order. And if you are drinking diet colas that contain aspartame, or chewing gum that contains NutraSweet, or Equal, or any of the other brand names under which aspartame is sold, you need your head examined. Literally. Peer-reviewed scientific studies have shown that from 1983, when aspartame was first put on the market, brain tumors began to skyrocket, even as other forms of cancer were either flatlining or in decline. A mere coincidence, you might think? Well, absolutely not. When you actually start to examine the chemical composition of aspartame, you find three constituent components. One is methyl ester. Methyl ester metabolizes in the bloodstream as methanol, which is wood alcohol. And for those out there who don't know, wood alcohol is highly poisonous, with as little as 10 milliliters causing permanent blindness, and somewhere around 125 milliliters being deadly. Now, the worst part is, methanol itself might pass through the system in trace amounts like is found in aspartame, but it gets worse. It actually metabolizes further into formaldehyde, which cannot be removed from the body. Its effects are cumulative, and after drinking this poison-laced soda or chewing this poison-laced gum for a number of years and even decades, the formaldehyde can begin to build up to toxic levels. Not only is the methyl ester constituent component of aspartame highly poisonous, but another of the constituent components of aspartame is called aspartic acid, or aspartate, which in fact is a highly toxic excitotoxin, or a specific type of neurotoxin that inflicts damage on brain and nerve cells. Specifically, it can disrupt the creation of L-tryptophan, which is one of the building blocks for serotonin, a very important neurotransmitter, and it can literally cause brain damage. So for those of you out there who are hearing this for the first time, all I can say is, if you see aspartame, you should think poison, and you should not drink or eat whatever contains that aspartame. Aspartame is poison. And to back that up, I would like to exhort each and every one of my listeners to watch an incredibly detailed, well-researched, and well-presented documentary called Sweet Misery, which looks at some of the very important scientific details behind the chemical composition of aspartame and how it is toxic on so many levels. This documentary contains interviews with neuroscientists and former FDA investigators and people who were actually involved in the independent studies, which time after time showed some of the harmful and toxic effects of aspartame, as opposed to, of course, the industry-funded studies, which a peer-reviewed scientific paper showed were statistically, surprisingly, much more likely to find positive attitudes and things to say about aspartame. Well, of course, this documentary also lays out some of the ways in which the experimental data from even the industry-funded studies were skewed and, in some cases, completely forged in order to make it seem like aspartame was not toxic. But there were very key studies that were done which showed some of these toxic effects in some of the animals that they were tested on, including brain tumors in rats and even death in some of the monkeys that aspartame was tested on in its initial test experiments. There was an equal amount of shenanigans going on in the approval process for aspartame.
At the time that they put their evidence into FDA in 1973, there were no requirements at FDA to examine effects on the brain from food additives. No requirements whatsoever. So there never was a study done to look at whether or not this affected the brain in a neurological sense. The cancer studies were incidental. Those were cancer studies. But these were not brain studies. The cancer studies turned up brain tumors. But they didn't look, for example, at these holes in the brain or mental retardation or lowering the ability of people to think or causing dizziness or blindness or any of those things. None of that was looked at. And we were proposing that we design some studies to look at it. Ultimately, he made the decision not to find out what the facts were, but to move forward on the limited record that they had before them. And I believe it was a decision that was made that said we can accomplish our ends better legally and politically than we can by actually doing the science.
Of course, if all of that wasn't enough, perhaps Donald Rumsfeld should have noticed when the Air Force's own special publication called Flying Safety, Volume 48, Number 1, which was issued in January 1992, came out with a special story about aspartame and how it should not be ingested before those in the United States Air Force fly a mission. Yes, even the U.S. Air Force has admitted that drinking cola might be dangerous before flying an aircraft. And think what that means if you are ingesting this on a daily basis.
Thanks for listening. New World Notes is produced for WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. For the passage from the Corbett Report, number 89, June 7, 2009, our thanks to James Corbett and CorbettReport.com. New World Notes is available off the air by internet stream, podcast, or MP3 download at your convenience. All is free. For more information, find us on the web. We're at http://newworldnotes.blogspot.com. The opinions expressed are mine alone. Your feedback is welcome. You'll find my email address at the website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest New England, this is Kenneth Doust, wishing you a good week and advising, illegitimi non carborundum, keep the faith, please tune in again, and for the pause that really refreshes, tune into your non-commercial community radio station. Ciao!